Okay, we're back, and I have in the studio with me all of the members of Utikins for 9/11
yeah.
Truth.
Yeah, so which we both of us, I think. Yes, both of all of us.
And although
I consider you a member too, so don't worry about it. You're definitely among the you're among the chosen few here on the station, definitely.
So we're all present, and there's
yes.
there's a microphone for each of us.
We got a quorum today. That's I haven't had a quorum in a long time. You start to feel pain if you don't have a quorum. You know that.
So I haven't heard anything from our information source in a long time. So, Herb, what have you been digging up?
Well, of course, our first issue is always the towers. And WTC-7. But we've also been doing a little research on the Pentagon. And that's something we haven't really touched too much upon, the Pentagon or Shanksville. Mm-hmm. But Shanksville is pretty easy as far as that no plane crashed in Shanksville. So we can maybe touch on that first. Visigoth, whose show we've been on, has done a lot of Visigoths from the Grassy Knoll. He's at Visigoths Beyond the Grassy Knoll. He's done probably some of the best research on Shanksville and Flight 93.
I'll have to second that, really. Quite some really wonderful shows, yes.
So we always go to what we know for sure. And a plane didn't crash in the hole in Shanksville, the 20-foot crater. And we could safely say a plane did not crash in Shanksville. The story about a shoot down was a red herring, probably put in by what we believe is the fake 9/11 movement. So it was the chaser tail after. It looked like it was attacking the official story, when in a way it was almost confirming it. You know, they're saying it was shot down, like there was an it to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So. The theory is now, and it seems pretty reasonable, that what created that crater in Shanksville was an ordnance blast.
Oh, could you explain to the listeners what an ordnance blast is?
An ordnance blast would be just like a missile
okay. Shot
down into the ground to put the hole. But that's what created that plume, if you've ever seen the famous picture. From what was it, Val McClatchy?
The End of Serenity, I think it was called. Just a very decorative little photo there. Like it should be one of those 500-piece jigsaw puzzles. Maybe they've made one of that. I don't know, possibly.
Yeah. So I don't know if Andy's been studying the cell phone, the alleged cell phone calls. And
I've been studying
a little bit more
things sporadically.
Well, I haven't. So I'm not, I don't know. It seems some of them were faked. Some of them. I think they've even changed their story, changing them from from the cell phone to the CPAC phone. So I think that one bears a little more investigation. But Wendy just pulled one up recently on our site that one of the cell phone calls, and I think that's been out for a while. It definitely sounded very odd and very suspicious.
Yeah, that was the one at the end of it where somebody said, "You done good." And you're just wondering who was saying that, and it was just such an odd thing to say. And the woman was trying not to hang up the phone. The person said, sort of whispered, "You done good," and that lends itself to a lot of speculations. Why would she say that? It's an odd situation. We're not. In other words, nothing here is set in stone. By the way, we're not saying this is. We have no orthodoxy, or we have certainly not fundamentalists on this issue. But we try to promote a lot of things so people can study them and think about them and say, gee, that makes sense, or gee, that's a lot of crap, or whatever. But we certainly do that because that's necessary, and once people have to make up their own minds, because we rely upon people who come to our site and who occasionally hear us talk and do stuff, that they should make up their own minds. I don't care if people have a totally different opinion, but just as long as they're challenged enough to unclog their minds and their cognitive dissonance for about 5 minutes and listen to what we have to say. And if they do, fine. This is no pressure here. But what we have to say, I think, is some of these things are very disturbing, and they have a lot of things here that are very. They require some scrutiny, because the cell phone issue is something that's been very, very controversial since the beginning about the fact that you really couldn't make a cell phone call from an airliner, or there were seat back phones, and then they started saying there were cell phones, and they said there were seat back phones. They changed their stories, and even a guy here who was originally from Clinton, who died on Flight 93, was alleged to have made a cell phone call from the toilet of the plane that was coming down, saying there was an explosion. But the fact is, he was in a double Faraday cage. He was inside a bulkhead, inside an aluminum tube, which I don't know if a cell phone would work well. You know that when you drive under a bridge, your radio sometimes just cuts out for like a minute or two, or a second or two. Not a minute. This one's on the bridge, but it tends to, if you go under a metal structure or whatever, you know that's a Faraday cage. It basically cuts off any radio waves. So what are you dealing with there? I don't know if it's the frequency or what have you, but it does give one pause, and I think there's some very unusual and anomalous things about what happened that day that need to be looked at, because we were sold a national fairy tale. We were sold a beautiful story about how they got the plane, they wrestled the plane away from the hijackers and it prevented it from causing another disaster, and that's a lovely story. And the book came out, Let's Roll. All these other things occurred, and it was just so, it was such a, these stories are, I mean, that's a part of what American history is made of, is stories. But most of it is mythology. It's like George Washington and the cherry tree and Abe Lincoln and the rail splitting and whatever else he was splitting. I don't know. What was he splitting, Pete?
Hairs,
probably. Well, he was a very good speaker, so he could do that. But he was splitting hairs on the head of Stephen Douglas, I think. And that's why he went bald. But seriously, this is there's a lot of stuff, and it all becomes a mythology, but it becomes a national mythology, and this is stuff that we were sold. But the thing about this mythology was, it was packaged from the very beginning. It was corporate. It was basically tied up in a little bow and set in front of the American public on September 11th of 2001, and that's what we need to deconstruct and look at, and that's all I'm saying. And by the way, I think that it's necessary to have due respect for the people who died that day. I think it's absolutely paramount that we have respect for the people who died on the day of September 11th, and the people who definitely were injured and had suffered as a result of working in the ruins of the World Trade Center. Those people deserve our deepest compassion, sympathy, and support, and their survivors do. In many cases, the people who worked there are now dead because of toxic materials that were on site. So we're not in any way lightening this up, and we're not making a joke out of it. But this also bears scrutiny, because people do die in situations that are less than what they say they are. And I think that's now back to Herb, because I need to take a drink.
Okay, so yeah, so we're not really wedded to anything as far as a cell phone call. That one bears a little more investigation. But we could say a plane did not crash in a 20-foot hole and disappear in Shanksville, leaving no bodies, no wreckage, no jet fuel. I think that might be one of the most outrageous parts of the 9/11 conspiracy theory put forth by the government. And I think that's one that even the 9/11 movement kind of steered away from, or they just put down the shoot down theory, but they never really looked at that one. And that's where I think Visigoth from Beyond the Grassy Knoll, whose show we've been on, he's done some of the best work on that, I think. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we stand, that no plane crashed in Shanksville. There was talk about a site in New Baltimore that was corridored off, and one of the the guy's name from one of the networks that thought it was a big story that Lisa Giuliani contacted.
The name has flown right out of my mind, but that is available on Visigoth's website, which is beyondthegrassyknoll.com. That interview is available for download, and they did that. That would be one of the wing interviews.
Right.
So that was with Lisa Giuliani and Victor Thorne. They did a wonderful job, I got to say. They went away for a little while and they came back, and they're back where they were, which is wonderful. They did a nice job on this stuff. Well, I appreciate the fact that they do. People need to need the research aspect of it, which is not to say getting into theories of who done it and why they done it and all this other stuff, but the aspect of what physically happened that day is really the most important aspect. Then everybody begins to come up with their own theories about stuff, and we all have our theories, and there's nothing wrong with that as long as, you know, we keep, you know, polite. But
I mean, I do feel that's kind of where what we feel is the fake 9/11 movement comes in.
Yeah.
Is the speculation. Mm-hmm. And we'll get more maybe that Hegelian dialectic and how they herd you into two separate camps of what happened when there's also another alternative. And they and that's, you know, that's part of the controlled opposition aspect. You have to take this side or that side. Well, there's another side. And they don't. They just basically ignore that other side, which we'll get into as far as the towers.
Well, it's like right and left. Those are two controlled viewpoints, because whether you're on the right or the left, they give you a whole set of things to believe, and you have to espouse those things, or else they vote you off the island. Or, you know, they don't let you play any of the reindeer games, and it's terrible because that's true. And I have to say, Herb and I are, you know, we're old friends. But we have slightly we come from slightly different places maybe, and I think that we get to the same place actually eventually, but I get some weird magazines that I'm rather ashamed of getting. We get Mother Jones, and I was an article in this edition, this most recent edition, which I managed to scan and post on our site, so we're in violation of various copyright laws in there. But I added my own commentary, so it actually becomes my work of commentary. On Dave Gilson wrote a piece about 9/11, and it's all the usual food groups in there about how crazy people are who believe in this stuff, and how dare they ask questions. And yeah, don't ask questions, just kiss Obama's ring, you'll be fine, don't worry about it.
I was so disgusted by the article, I started reading it on the air, and I just couldn't finish it, even with commentary. I was just too fed up with it.
Oh, you were reading my article, that's good. I hope I didn't write anything in there that was unreadable on the air.
I only got to your third comment, and at which point I just couldn't stand what the original author was writing and discontinued it.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. At least it wasn't my commentary that did it. I appreciate that.
One point I want to make about that, and I'm sure if you've read any of these type of, you know, debunking attempts, mm-hmm. is, like, they never give you the actual arguments for, like, say, take the controlled demolition. They never actually give you the arguments other than just to say, oh, you know, they're crazy for suggesting that. They never actually give you the arguments for controlled demolition, which we'll get into, or they rarely even give you the official theory for why these buildings collapsed. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that in almost every single instance I've ever seen in any, like, national piece, you know, whether it's like this article or the attempts by Poppin Mechanics or the History Channel, they never give you the actual arguments. They never tell you why we actually say this.
And then there's Alexander Nude Sunbathing Hazard, who we've taken apart too on our site a long while ago, but on the Nation. But all these people, they really, and it's amazing, both the right and the left. So. It's just amazing. It just shows you how controlled everything is, and it's not like we're shrill here. Actually, we're pretty relaxed about this stuff, and we're trying not to be shrill. Actually, it's so easy after you've lived in this world a while and you start yelling at the radio whenever something comes on, you suddenly just sort of look at it and say, yeah, there they go again. Well, here we go again. We're on now, And that's what you got to deal with for the next however long we're on here.
Yeah, with this controlled right and left, what you want to look at with these groups isn't where they disagree; it's what they agree on. That's what you got to look, and that's what you have to question: what they agree on, because mm-hmm. they're usually, and in my opinion, they're usually arguing over a false proposition. Like the right will say we're not doing enough for the war on terror. The left were saying we're doing too much for the war on terror, when they're both in agreement there's a war on terror, which, yes, of course, we disagree with.
Which is our friend Dave of 9/11 Blimp, I hope he's listening, will appreciate that, because that's his, because the lie is there. The lie is in the argument. It's in the basis of the argument of the war on terror itself. Is there a war on terror? Why is there a war on terror? Because these people hate our freedom. But we have to fight them either with a lot or a little. You know, are we going to go fight over in Iraq? Or are we going to stay here and make and do? But that isn't the issue. The issue is the war on terror itself a fraud? And that's what we're basically saying, that it's a construct. It was 9/11 was a big magician's trick. It was essentially a Reichstag style event that was calculated to bring Americans to a certain level of acceptance of various things. It was like a Swiss Army knife of different agendas at that time, including, by the way, the creation of the 9/11 movement. But we'll get into that later. But the various other things that occurred were that, well, basically, Larry Silverstein got to take down his buildings, which were reeking of asbestos. Bush got a mandate. They got a war they wanted. The defense contractors all had woodies as a result of that deal. It was all, you know, delightful stuff. And it created this huge, and it gave them the right, you know, to go around and stomp on people and tap their phones and hi, Mom, and all these other things that were going on. So, oh well, but that's what we got. It was a multifaceted. A lot of people benefited from it. It wasn't just, but there was a lot of monetary benefit too from the. Basically, they had a mandate to go and fight a war, and who got that mandate? The money of it. Now, this is not a huge Illuminati type thing with, you know, people hiding in the background and people doing secret handshakes. People made money off this. Made it money off it, plain and simple. Bush got a mandate. He got to do a lot of things and create a lot of new crazy laws, and nobody questioned him because you had to support your president after 9/11. And they, you know, played a lot of patriotic music and remember Pearl Harbor and all that stuff. It's crazy stuff, and that's exactly what we got on 9/11. And I believe me, when it was going on, I was looking at it with a certain degree of chagrin, but I did not know the extent of how it was being manipulated, but it certainly was. I just felt despair when that was occurring because I knew manipulation was taking place.
By the way, we're not saying, and I don't know how far you got in that Gilson article, but of course the first straw man he set up was Bush did this. The left always uses the Bush did this, mm-hmm, like they came in and, you know, they came into office, came up with this plan in 9 months, executed this false flag. What we believe is a false flag event. That's a straw man argument used by the left, that they have to deny that there is actually power beyond the president, and they have to keep this right left paradigm going. And so they always play the Bush, you know, Bush did it, and Bush is too incompetent to do this, so it couldn't have been Bush. And that's one of the first straw man argument they always set up.
They always play that Keystone Cops saying, see how incompetent they are? Now, don't you feel better? They couldn't have done this.
Right.
It makes me feel good to be an American, knowing our people are just sort of, you know, running into each other and falling down the stairs, and, you know, like it's like you should be playing music in the background. But this is essentially, that's true. Yeah, look how, you know, these, yeah, but wait till our guy gets in, and then everything will be pure and sweet and beautiful and good, and no bad things will ever happen again, boys and girls.
And
that's a lovely way to phrase it, isn't it?
And again, we're saying this has been, Bin Laden had been and set up as a boogeyman for years. So this has been in the planning stages for years. But as far as the Bush being so incompetent, first off, they should know he stole 2 elections. They're not that incompetent. They were very competent when it came to getting rid of all the evidence. And they're also trying to sell the idea. They get a lot of bang for their buck with this, but they're also trying to sell the idea that these wars are going badly. And they're not. There are certain groups that these wars that never end are going pretty well for. Like, again, some of the groups Andy mentioned, the defense contractors, the bankers. And those are the people, those interests are more important than the interests of America or the troops or the Iraqis who were supposedly freeing. So even that, I believe, I don't even agree with, they're not as incompetent as they're portraying themselves or they're being portrayed.
No, I think they're very competent. at doing what they're very competent in making us think they're incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that could be a conspiracy in itself. And of course, yeah, maybe Bush mangles the English language. And well, let me
quite
put it
possibly on purpose.
Well, on purpose, sure. But yeah. let me put it this way about Bush and Cheney. In the 1930s, there was a radio show, and it featured Charlie McCarthy, who was a ventriloquist dummy. And then there was Edgar Bergen. Let's say Charlie McCarthy is analogous to Bush. Edgar Bergen, let's say, is analogous to Cheney or Rove. And let's say he's, and everybody thinks, oh, yeah, Cheney is the one in power. But then again, they were at NBC. Who was running NBC? It wasn't Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. It was David Sarnoff. And nobody saw his picture. So who's running these? It's the money people. It's the people who stand the most to gain from this stuff, who are essentially ruthless in their outlook. Maybe they feel they're not. Maybe they feel they're doing good somehow. There may be a twisted logic to that. Because I don't necessarily, people get up in the morning and say, ha, 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 I'm so evil. Although I say that occasionally. But that's only, some mornings I'm feeling that good. But most people don't do that, especially if they are evil. They actually justify their evil one way or another. So it's not a question of trying to say these people are, it's so easy to create that. Well, talk about a Hegelian dialectic. This is sort of a Manichaean thing that, everybody's evil or good or whatever. I think a lot of people they think they're doing good, but they're compromised. They're sold out. They're in it for the Barack buck, and that's what they got, and that's what they're doing, and the rest of us are SOL, and you know what that rhymes with. So you remember that record, don't you?
No.
No, SOL Blues by Louis Armstrong. Okay. You have to listen to that. It's really good, by the way.
Sounds familiar. I just want to remind the listeners, if you're out there listening to this and you want to get a word in, you're welcome to. The number here,
I dare you to get one in edgewise.
The number here is 859-4200. Again, the number, it's area code 315-859-4200. And before I get off the phone with you, I'll tell you done good.
Yes, definitely. And if you can survive a talk with us, yeah, you probably will have done good, actually. This is WHCL, isn't it? 88.7 FM?
We're broadcasting live from the Bristol Center.
That's what I thought. See, I know where we are.
You can also get us on the web at whcl.org.
Yes, thank you for streaming, by the way. I do appreciate it. So what else have we got? We're talking about...
We'll save the top. We'll save the WTC buildings for last, I think. But one that we've kind of stayed away from was the Pentagon. Because that's one of the more controversial aspects of 9/11. Again, that some in the so-called movement won't even touch 9/11. They feel that it's a honeypot issue. That at some point they're going to release the tapes that show Flight 77 hit the Pentagon. So it's best to stay away from that one. And see, that was the one aspect that they had the most control over. Also, so it can be a little dicey. And you don't want to propose a theory and then, later on find out that they set you up.
Now, what happened with all of the video footage of what was going on around the Pentagon?
Apparently, whatever there is, whatever they admit that there is, has been confiscated. We've only seen, I believe, five frames that almost would... The puff of white smoke would almost lend one to believe that perhaps a missile hit the Pentagon. And I think that was first proposed by Terry Mason in a book. What, you don't remember the name of it, Andy? The Frightening Fraud or something like that.
Is that one of the guys Tarpley always talks
yes,
to?
Yes, the Frenchman,
one
Terry
of the guys,
Mason.
He has a lot of people on with accents. I can't listen to that stuff. And they're very intelligent, but I can't tune my ear to all these accents. I just have a... I guess that makes me some sort of a isolationist.
So I think the first thing you start with the Pentagon is not what hit it, but what didn't hit it. And is there any proof that Flight 77 hit the Pentagon? Well, there isn't any. We've seen five frames that don't really tell you much of anything that could be faked and probably were fake. We've had no parts identification. Most of the plane parts are stamped. as coming from where they've come from. So none of that, they had, like, as it hasn't been documented like any crime scene would. We've got a few pictures on the internet of what is this, what is that, where is it from, and it just is really irrelevant. But I think the key to the Pentagon is actually the last ring. It's not, first off, it's not what happened outside, it's what happened inside. And the last ring is where you have the punch out and it stops. Well, if a projectile had the mass and energy to punch out a hole through that last ring, it doesn't just stop. It at least goes on to the next ring. So what that shows you is either one of two things. The second one I hadn't really thought of until I heard an interview on Visigoth with the Citizens Investigation Team at their website. They have a website called the Pentagon. But so one possibility is pre-positioned explosives, just like the towers. Second possibility is that it was actually already set up in advance. Although I believe there are people had smelled cordite. I believe that explosives were planted inside the Pentagon for a simulation.
Now, where would anybody in the Pentagon get explosives?
So, but the key again is that last ring. If it had that, if something had the mass and energy to you know, pierce through all these rings, go 300 feet at an angle, pierce that wall, it goes on to the next wall at least. It doesn't just stop there. So that again, that indicates either explosives or this was already set up to begin with, although I believe it was explosives. So, and that now these, we mentioned the Citizens Investigative Committee. I believe their website is the Pentagon with a C.
Yeah, I think that's a film they made, and I believe
right.
We have that. If somebody will scroll down on our website, which is uticansfor911truth.blogspot.com, or if you just go on Google, type in uticansfor911truth. If you type Uticans in, we come right at the top. It shows you what Utica's all about these days. But we're looking at that, so just type Uticans into Google. But if you scroll down a bit, and a couple of months ago, I think I posted that movie, so if you want to look at that stuff, but these guys are doing some pretty interesting work, and they had conducted some interviews with people and essentially got them to admit things that they didn't want to admit, which was rather impressive, if you ask me, because otherwise you never know what people are going to do. But one of the policemen said, he mentioned how he saw something go a certain way, and then it was proven that couldn't have been the plane that hit the Pentagon, because that it was just the wrong. It just went the wrong way, and that's an interesting admission. So this is, again, this is all stuff we're dealing with, and it all depends if you want to be a loyal American and believe everything you see on the news and what you've been told has happened. Feel free. That's okay. I don't claim I'm a loyal American. I if you call me a traitor, I'll say, well, maybe I am, but only because I believe in thinking for myself, and if you want to accept that story, that's good. But this stuff is out there too, and if you want to look at it, we have it, and that's the best I can say on that topic.
Yeah. So what the Citizen Investigation Team has concluded is that nothing had actually hit the Pentagon; that it was actually a flyover, and there were at least three planes going through that area at that time,
mm-hmm.
and they believe. They have a police officer saying he saw the plane on the north side. Well, it couldn't, if that was on the north side, it couldn't have hit the telephone poles on the south side, I believe, is right, Andy? Isn't that one
well,
of the things
that's
they
essentially,
claim?
That's essentially, that's the gist of it. Maybe a little more, but that's essentially because they basically said that in the interviews, the eyewitness interviews from the police, who most people would judge as unimpeachable authorities, because if you see a policeman in court, and even though he's, whatever happens, you got to go in there for something or other, the cop is going to get, he's going to get the preference over whatever lies you're trying to put forward. So, you got to kind of accept that, I guess.
No, I haven't completely done enough research on this. From what we know about the 9/11 movement and how a lot of speculation was to have you chase your tail, and in the beginning, if you look, it was always over what hit the Pentagon. Was it a missile? Was it an A3 Sky Warrior? And again, since we believe the 9/11 movement was created by the actual perps, the more speculative, most of their speculation has turned out not to be correct. So just from that aspect alone, that they would have you arguing over what hit the Pentagon when, in fact, quite possibly nothing hit the Pentagon, just fits in with how the 9/11, you know, the fake 9/11 movement has had you chasing your tail and just spending a lot of time on speculation that I think was incorrect and I think on purpose.
Herb, that seems on par with what you guys mentioned earlier with, you know, what side of the war on terror are you on when, in fact, there is no war on terror.
Yeah, right. It was like, what hit the Pentagon? Well, maybe nothing hit the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
But they had you arguing over what hit the Pentagon. And again, if you look at... Now, it's not like I like saying the 9/11 movement is fake, because I went to a conference a couple years ago, a 9/11 conference in Chicago, and I met quite a few of these guys.
And a lot of them whom we're disagreeing with now pretty heavily.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Like Webster Tarpley being one who I thought was like the giant intellect of the 9/11 movement.
We had a little shrine to Tarpley, by the way. It was, you know, he put flowers on it every day and a bottle of beer because he likes that.
And now you've desecrated it.
Yes. Now we drink the beer ourselves, and we do put something else on the statue. But no, Tarpley is, you know, he's turned into he's kind of gone off in an odd direction, and a lot of these guys have got agendas. And I hate to say it, a lot of them that we once admired, and we say, oh my God, Stephen Jones is going to be on, or David Ray Griffin, or Tarpley, or these or Fetzer, any of these people, we kind of put on this pedestal. And then we realized that they had basically feet in other parts of clay, probably up to the navel. So we discovered that all these things were going on, and essentially what we came away with was what our new motto is on our site, which is the cold passion for truth hunts in no pack, which is from a Robinson Jeffers poem, and that was quoted by our friend Viz. And it's a lovely, it really states how we feel. We're not a pack. We basically, and we don't agree on everything, which is the way it should be. We don't disagree to, you know, coming to fisticuffs or anything, but our main thing is to look at things with an open mind and try not to get all bent out of shape about stuff. But again, it's all about the individual's processing and perception of the information that can't be denied, and that's what we're up against here. We have all this stuff there. The microphone is sagging. That's okay.
No, it's just adjusting it.
Oh.
I think one of the tip-offs that the 9/11 movement was fake. There were whispers. There were some people that were actually saying it. You know, it had been set up that way in the beginning. But one of the tip-offs was, for start, I don't know if you're aware, a lot of these guys were on Fox especially. And, you know, like Webster Tarpley, David Ray Griffin, Stephen Jones was on, I believe, CNN or Tucker Carlson. And they always seemed to have very poor performances.
Mm-hmm.
And they never seemed to lead with their best stuff that were in their books.
Right.
And that was sort of a tip-off that why are these guys always doing such a poor job? Now, Jim Fetzer had a hard time with Laura Ingraham on his show, of all things.
Yes.
And Jim Fetzer can argue with anybody.
As a matter of fact, he's like Castro. You know, you just wind him up and let him go. He talks for 6 hours. And, you know, not that I should talk about that. But, again, Fetzer has got that capacity for unrestrained monologue. And and I got to admire that because I'm aspiring to that. But when he was on with Ingraham, He floundered, he flummoxed, he went humming, humming, humming. He was like the chef of the future, and you know, he just wanted to, buy a can opener from him or something. But he was so, it was just such a sad thing. And of course, they were making fun of him. They had a little sound like, oh, the nutty professor and all that stuff. And we heard that bit, and it was rather sad. It was sad because he was when he's like a bulldog at that point. He was very good at his own turf. He was really, you know, quite vehement about stuff, and he gets on with Laura Ingraham, who's not necessarily a pushover, but no, she's got her own shtick. She's like a, Limbaugh in burlap panties and whatever, but very, very much that ilk, and not that.
He should have ate her for breakfast.
Well, he should have, yes, and he probably could. I've seen him. He could have had that. Oh, yeah, Pete found a little thing on the web. So what was that thing you found where, yeah, so you can read it.
Which one should I start with?
Oh, the bottom one there.
Okay. Well, I can't read the title of it.
Well, don't read the title. you need not read the title. That would get us a nailed by the FCC.
By the way, I love the Utikins on Visigoth comparing Fetzer to a QVC host. My golly, Judy, it's fabulous.
Oh, my God, Judy, that's fabulous. I just went over the peak level on that, by the way. I guess I can adjust it later.
And another point about these guys being on the media, if you accept the notion that, you know, 9/11 isn't what they told us, and that the media is participating in this cover-up, they are not going to let real opposition anywhere near their show. So we're very suspicious of anybody that just happens to be on Hannity and Cohn's. Anybody. And it includes some people I've met, you know, like Tarpley. And I believe one guy who I really thought did a great job of a presentation in Chicago was Kevin Ryan. And I guess I'd read somewhere that he'd had an appearance once also, and also Kevin Barrett.
I hope they don't ask us because I won't go.
They
don't want to talk to, you know, the cast for The Friendly Ghost and Meathead there. No thanks.
So we're going back, and I'm kind of using some of the material I got from the, some of the books I've gotten, like David Ray Griffin's books, and I'm looking for the straw man. I'm looking at where they speculate, and I'm trying to go the other. I'm trying to go, like, go in between. Again, when they heard you into the two camps, I try to go in between because I think, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that 9/11 movement is controlled. But, again, they do give you some good stuff, one of which we'll get into, a letter that Andy and I had written that the OD wouldn't touch, but
yes,
we'll get into that.
Because, you know, the OD, they're the watchdogs of the media. They don't let anything in there they don't agree with. Hi, Dave. How you doing? Nice to hear you. I hope you're listening today. I hope your hair falls out. Yeah, Dave the Dyke. I love Dave the Dyke. I'd like to, you know, whatever. We'll meet him in a dark alley with a tire iron someday, and, you know, we'll feel better about it.
So, again, I guess that's our feeling on the Pentagon. I'm leaning heavily towards nothing hitting the Pentagon, but explosives in the building, almost certainly.
Now, for the Shanksville, I thought I heard something about a separate crash site.
That was in New Baltimore.
Okay.
There was, and I the name escapes us both, but it might actually, if we went on Visigoth's site, you can actually find it, because they had mentioned Lisa Giuliani was trying to get in touch with the CNN, I believe, the anchor that did the original story, thought there was a story in New Baltimore of a crash site. And then, even according to him, the government was basically controlling what got out, and they told him there was no story, and that was just dropped.
Move along, citizen. Nothing to see here.
Yeah, by the way, the best chance we believe you have in these type of events to get the truth is the original reporting, because that's you know, they don't know the story that they're going to have to sell later. They don't know what they're going to have to cover up. They're just reporting what they're actually seeing or not seeing. And if you look at some of the original footage of 9/11, talk about explosives at the towers, a plane not crashing anywhere near the Pentagon. I don't see a crash site in Shanksville. That's kind of where you want to go towards, because that's real.
They still haven't got the latest pages from Wag the Dog Central yet. No, those script pages haven't come in. Oh, we have this latest development. It turns out it was Osama bin Laden. We found the passport of this guy, and look at this. And that's it. You gotta, when we get the script pages, then we can parse it out, because those initial reports, you know, they're always unreliable. They're never true. No, don't believe your own eyes. Believe what we tell you.
Kennedy assassination, Oklahoma City bombing, all, again, the original reporting was much different than it was even just a few hours later.
You want to speak about the passport that was found intact?
Oh, well, since I brought it up, I suppose, yeah, they found a passport of one of the hijackers at the World Trade Center site. It was not even scorched. It was in pristine condition. After, you know, that fireball that brought down those towers couldn't bring down a passport. Imagine that.
But they also found, at Shanksville, they found a bandana of one of the hijackers.
Yes.
And the latest,
and his guitar.
It
was Willie Nelson.
Phone call we were talking about, you know, even though everything else had basically supposedly disintegrated Shanksville, they just happened to find her driver's license also.
Uh-huh.
So just a lot of, had a few of those. I'm not sure if they had anything like that at the Pentagon, but Shanksville and World Trade Centers, they just happened to find these, it just happened to be a hijacker's passport. It just happened to be a lady who had made a phone call. It happened to be her driver's license they found. They didn't find the plane. They didn't find the body. There's no jet fuel, but they did find a bandana and a driver's license.
It's always good to have props, isn't it? You know, you can't go anywhere without props. You know, that's essential to any successful story. Otherwise, you have to rely on your imagination entirely.
By the way, we get to the letter. This is sort of one of my epiphanies. Most of what we're saying, like when we say a plane didn't crash in Shanksville, we say explosives were planted in the Pentagon. These are not conspiracy theories. These are scientific theories. These don't really, by themselves, don't tell you the identity of the conspirators. These are just purely scientific theories. So when popular mechanics and Mother Jones and always paint these as conspiracy theories, they're either inaccurate or they're being intellectually dishonest, as they know this conspiracy theory is just, it's a propaganda term. It has a negative connotation. So if you have a scientific theory and they portray it as a conspiracy theory, again, they're wrong.
By a tinfoil hat wearing nut job, that's what we are. We left our tinfoil hats because they would interfere with a radio signal, but we have them in the lobby. No, it is all semantics. It is all basically language, control of language, how things are used. And that's why we have to be very careful not to use, and that's why by stating this is a scientific theory, and we're not saying that whoever did it, first of all, in order to have a conspiracy theory, you have to consider who the conspirators are. This we do not do. We do not, although we might have opinions about that thought, We do not indulge those, generally speaking. I have a sort of a blanket thing I call the big casino, which is to say, all the big guys at the top there, they're rolling the dice on our heads, and that's the world. The world is their baize, so to speak, and that's the big casino. And all the world leaders, even those that would seem to be in opposition or even in total enmity to each other, are in that casino, and they're just having fun, and they're doing it, it's almost like they're so jaded that they do this in order to pass the time in a way. This of course is it's a fanciful thought, but I don't think that there's any one group that you can say, oh boy, they did it, or these people did it, but there are players that would certainly be more influential than others. And that's what we got. So I think that now where was I? Because I just forgot what I was saying. But yeah, about the conspiracy theory aspect of it, you if you call it a conspiracy theory, you have to say who did it. Or you have to say, like, with JFK, was it Castro, was it the Cubans, or the CIA, or the Mafia? So immediately you have to come up with some sort of a construct to say that these people did it for this reason and that's why it happened and such and such. Whereas the theory that we just, with JFK, would say, well, Oswald couldn't possibly have fired all those bullets because it's physically impossible, without saying who did it. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's a scientific observation. And what we have are scientific observations. And I detest people using words in that manner. It's just like how Rush Limbaugh took the word liberal, turned it into a swear word, and now all the liberals are hiding out. Even the people at Mother Jones aren't liberal anymore. It's amazing. I haven't seen a I think you're a liberal. You better hide, because, you know, they'll come after you. You know, they'll put you in a display somewhere, in a diorama. And that would be painful. But no, I don't see any liberals out there because, you know, Rush Limbaugh killed them all. So what we have is the far right and the center right. That's all we have left. And the left is no longer there. You can go on now.
yeah, that's, of course, if anyone's read 1984 and Doublespeak and The Thought Police, of course, a lot of Orwell's other writings, is, you know, Orwell warned about this. The misuse of language, how language corrupts thought, thought corrupts language. So, yeah, that's kind of one of my epiphanies that, wait a second, this is a sign, you know, the controlled demolition hypothesis. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's a scientific theory. And this is the letter the OD wouldn't print. And
no, I think it gave Dave Dodiak a headache. I'd like to give him a headache, but I wouldn't want to say how. But seriously, folks, I think that the fact that we were saying this wasn't a conspiracy theory must have seemed like a non sequitur to him, because people at the OD being, and I've had good experiences with the OD, by the way. They once did a lovely article on me and another person on a totally different topic, and I have to say I appreciated that. And the reporter who did that was very skillful indeed. But in the editorial page, or the viewpoints page, I love that. Well, our viewpoint is being totally ignored here, totally, because They'll take the viewpoint of people who don't like Mr. Dingling because they think his tune is annoying, but our tune is really annoying because they won't even recognize it.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the letter is up on our website.
Yes, you can scroll down for that, and I might submit that elsewhere, because even though I kind of gave up for a while, and I actually said I was going to take a hiatus, which I kind of have done. You can't really. It's sort of like every time you try to get out, they pull you back in. That sort of thing. One of The Godfather Part 3. So every time I try to get out, it's because I've got like 17 different interests here. But this is one of the things that obviously I feel occasionally I need to opine on the topic, or I find an interesting image, or I find some sort of anomalous thing that needs to be posted, and I don't have a problem with doing that. I don't think about this stuff all day, by the way. I think about a lot of other things, and what I would think about would surprise most of you, but it would surprise me too if I actually, you know, actually seriously thought about it. But it's such a this is one of the things that I certainly feel strongly about. And I just, sometimes you get tired and you got to get away from the bickering and the little, all these little email chains that people are sending each other about who's suing whom and who did what to whom and who did it and how bad this particular group of people are. And that stuff gets, you know, it makes my brain hurt much more than Dave's hurts when he reads my stuff. So just imagine that.
Yeah, see, I believe our letter was in July, right, Pete?
Yes, that's our letter to the OD.
And
you can.
I'm really, actually, really proud of that letter. I think it's probably our best one yet, because it really undercuts their whole conspiracy theory argument. Again, the point we're making is it's scientific, and in scientific terms, it's a perfectly rational explanation. And,
well, Pete's going to read it now.
Sunday, yes. July 6, 2008, our next letter to the OD. The following is a true collaborative effort between Herb Smith and me. It will bear my signature for the Utica Observer Dispatch and will be co-signed for other publications. You gotta love semantics. Rush Limbaugh is being paid $50 million a year through 2016, mainly for services rendered in making liberal the dirtiest word in the English language. Democrats in Congress are so fearful of the epithet.
It's
a word.
Yeah, it's a lovely word. That's our vocabulary word for today.
Well, that's beautiful. For the epithet, that they've taken on the protective coloration of Republicans. Only those specially trained can tell them apart. Likewise, when one suggests that buildings at the World Trade Center were brought down by controlled demolitions, he's immediately labeled a conspiracy theorist. A term meant to evoke tinfoil hats and lapses in medication. By the same token, you might as well call Isaac Newton a gravity theorist.
I like that line, by the way.
The controlled demolition hypothesis is a scientific argument which states that the use of prepositioned explosives is the only possible explanation for the manner in which the buildings fell and for the amount of energy released in their destruction. There's no theory about the identities of any possible conspirators. In scientific terms, the argument for prepositioned explosives is perfectly rational. The collapses exhibited features seen exclusively in controlled demolitions. No additional theories are required to explain the relevant evidence. Actually, it is the official explanation of a fire-induced gravitational collapse which violates known laws of physics. Whether one adheres to it depends on how much stock one is willing to invest in the wild-eyed rantings of Mr. Newton and the hallucinations of that other nutjob, Galileo.
Yes. See, all the sarcastic stuff was mine, and all the scientific stuff was Herb's. That's how we work together. We work with science and sarcasm, like the Piranha Brothers.
And then I read.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Again, I think that's our best letter, because it really undercuts their argument. And to just kind of, like, expand upon a little bit, the official explanation violates at least three laws of physics. First one, they came straight down. The Building 7 collapsed almost entirely its own footprint. The towers, they didn't land in their footprint. They actually landed outside their footprint, but they came straight down through their vertical axis, which is the path of maximum resistance. Now, of course, a physical process follows the path of least resistance. So what this means is the resistance had to have been destroyed ahead of the falling mass. The second one, the law of conservation of energy. Energy can be neither created nor destroyed. The energy to destroy the towers and beyond, with the disintegration, which is shown by a couple scientific studies with the particle size distribution increasing as they got smaller. That's a signature of the molecular dissociation or disintegration. You had those dust clouds that were more like pyroclastic flow seen in volcanoes. That requires energy. You had fires for 99 days. You had reports of molten metal weeks later. How nearly everything was turned to dust while the building was falling. That's far in excess of what the gravitational potential energy can do. And again, this was happening while the buildings were coming down. It probably couldn't even, if you dropped a cement brick from the height of the towers like a quarter mile, it's not going to turn to powder. And that happened while the building was falling. So again, you have a violation of law of conservation of energy. The energy is just, and no one, and that's not controversial. You know, people have said people have been to disaster sites. They never saw anything like it. If you remember, just people were walking around. You had 4 inches of powder. That's you don't even see that in conventional controlled demolitions, where most of the energy is going towards destroying the vertical support columns, and then the floors hit the ground at free fall speed like a Building 7. You don't see that type of destruction. And you also had the law of angular conservation, where the south tower cap started to rotate towards the impact zone, and then it actually decelerated and started to come back the other way, and it just basically disintegrated. It just blew up. Again, that's if gravity were the only force, that should have toppled over, leaving the rest of the building standing up. But that's not what happened.
Well, they didn't want it to fall on the news crews, because somebody had to take a picture of this.
And that one has never been addressed. I've never seen that one. I've seen an attempt at the straight down, but I haven't really seen an attempt with, you know, where the south tower cap rotated, and I haven't really seen any attempt on the to debunk the amount of energy released in the destruction of the towers.
Herb, I think that was one of your most convincing arguments during your presentation when you're showing the video. Right. Of the tower collapsing.
Yeah.
I just, you know, you have so much of the weight is already falling.
Right, it's
forward.
Already going. If you're chopping down a tree, as it started, and it actually went apparently 23 degrees past vertical. So if you're chopping down a tree, it just doesn't suddenly start to come back the other way and push itself right down through the rest of the tree. I mean, that is one, they will never, they've tried to, they just ignore all their attempt at the conservation of energy violation is just on the Popular Mechanics 9/11 conspiracy show they had, they present the argument as the buildings fell too fast. Now, of course, if you think of a tree falling, it topples. The buildings didn't fall. They came through themselves. Second, the real argument is they were too thoroughly destroyed too quickly. They frame the argument falsely. That's not really the argument that they fell too fast, that they proceeded through the path of maximum resistance and too quickly and were too thoroughly destroyed, that gravity is not that strong.
Well, they disintegrated as they were coming down, and that doesn't happen. And if you want to test this, if anybody's intrepid enough, go to the roof of the state office building with a cinder block, and make sure nobody else is around, by the way, because you could hurt somebody, but drop one over the edge and see what happens. Is it going to be in micro dust sized particles, or is it going to be in chunks? That's what I would like to know. What are you going to find there? Are you going to find chunks or micro dust? And as micro dust was at the World Trade Center. So not that anyone should necessarily do this, but if you consider that fact, if you want to go, because that's the tallest building within from here to Syracuse. Just try that. Go on. I've been up on that roof. It's very pretty up there. It's about 17 floors up. That's a microcosm of this thing. Just take a cinder block, drop it over the edge, make sure nobody's walking out of there, and so you don't hurt anyone, and then see what occurs. That would be a wonderful experiment to see what would happen if you actually tried that in your own home. Our home isn't tall enough, although we got three floors, but 17 would be a little better. So, cement on cement, see what happened. Probably just leave a dent and make a mess, and you'd get fined. That's all.
And remember, when that happens, now that has arrested the fall. It's now stopped. So even if one floor could hit another floor, where one of them becomes dust, it would have had to encounter resistance to turn it to dust. So the collapse has stopped. So that disproves the pancake theory, because according to the pancake theory, one floor hit the, which of course doesn't address the vertical columns, but the pancake theory, which even NIST has gotten away from, is if one floor hit the next, well, you would have had a stack of floors at the bottom of the collapse.
Yeah. I call that the IHOP theory, by the way. But, it was LIHOP and MIHOP. That was IHOP.
But as you can see, right from the collapse, you have debris, you have it turning to powder, most of it landing outside the footprint of the building. So, dust, most of it, where it was supposed to do the work, it landed where it wasn't supposed to. It's supposed to do the work inside the building. It can't do the work inside the building if it's outside the building. So, as far as the pancake theory, dust, most of which landed outside the footprint, could not have contributed to this pancaking. But
I think you're just hungry. I'm telling you. Yeah, I know you wanted pancakes. You wanted to eat something. Yeah. That's okay.
But although the pancake theory has now been even NIST, who produced the official theory on the collapse of the towers, has said they're supporting their findings did not support the pancake theory. The actual theory is just simply column instability due to the connections and the floors being strong, causing sagging, and then they just say collapse. Total collapse was inevitable after the conditions for collapse initiate. Certain conditions were reached. They just say after a initiating event, it was inevitable that what occurred was inevitable. There's never been a case of a steel framed high rise building collapsing, especially in that manner, due to anything other than explosives. So the only conditions that are going to make what occurred inevitable were explosives.
That was because Allah wills it.
What that did is that allowed NIST just basically to, the physics violations that we mentioned, NIST just didn't address them because they stopped at collapse initiation. Yep. They didn't address all the demolition-like features of the collapses that we mentioned. So I guess the analogy I've come up with to that, it'd be like finding a man lying in the field with a bullet in his head and saying the fall killed him. And then you say, well, what about the bullet in his head? Well, we've already proven the fall killed him, so the bullet hole is irrelevant. That's that's the best analogy I can come up with in this report. They say what, and even the conditions that they have for collapse initiation are just data fudging. So even their collapse initiation theory is really suspect. As an example, we had the Matt Brewery had a fire.
Yeah.
One floor hit another floor, and it didn't even result in the total collapse. So there's an initiating event that did not, and we're not talking about a steel-framed high-rise building either. We're just talking about a four-story building.
Wasn't probably as well-built as
right,
the others.
Even that didn't result in a complete collapse, let alone one that mimics pre-positioned explosives. I guess our guy Dave from 9/11 Blimp doesn't really like the term controlled demolition because it conjures up. He believes it's, and he's right, it's understating what actually happened.
Definitely.
And it gives you a frame of reference for what you've seen before, whereas the towers, you've never seen that in any controlled demolition.
No, they were saving those special effects. Just like the Olympics, where they had the CGI of fireworks, and my God, that's amazing. And, of course, don't believe everything you see on TV, by the way. That's my word of the wise.